SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Call it hour three and a couple minutes in, and a perfect opportunity here as they throw the switch on this year's halter auction. The RMTC, the Racing Medication and Testing Consortium, and of course for, gosh, it might be 10 years we've had conversations. We haven't talked to Dr. Benson the second half of the year, but this is a great opportunity, and we'll say, first of all, hope that Dr. Benson, you had a lovely Thanksgiving. Good morning.
Good morning. It was lovely. Thank you.
Well, this is a lovely opportunity for collectors and for people that track items off the racetrack, whether it's saddle cloths and horseshoes. Well, there's nothing like a halter. And last year we talked about it at this time, and a great response by the collectible public, and $25,000, in excess of $25,000 raised, and you've got a glittering array of stars of tomorrow and stars of yesteryear that have been put together, and really we should acknowledge all the terrific organizations and stud farms and individuals that made this possible.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, we could spend an hour just thanking everyone who helped to donate halters. We've got breeding farms like Adena Springs and the Four Sixes Ranch on the Quarter Horse side, Stone Street, Timbertown, you know, Hillendale. I mean, virtually, we're so happy for the response we get from the farms and the trainers. We've got Bob Baffert, Brad Cox, Mott Stables, owners, Gary West. You know, everyone we've asked virtually to support this has donated in some way. You know, the halters we have are to me amazing. We get so excited every time we get a commitment for a halter, because we just know what we can do with the money that we get from these halters.
You know, I'm just looking at some of the names, and then coordinating them to the individual horses, and it's just amazing. And just to give everybody a quick rundown, Abel Tasman, Accelerate, Game Winner, Monomoy Girl, Wonder Gadot, Yoshida from ripped from today's headlines, and then how about either future Hall of Famers or existing Hall of Famers, Songbird, Silver Bullet Day, Rachel, Serena's Song, Havre de Grace, Lady Eli, American Pharoah, Animal Kingdom, AP Indy, unbelievable, California Chrome, Go Sapper, yeah. Geoponte, Gopher Gin, Grindstone Gunrunner, Justify Mastery, More Than Ready, Mucho Macho Man, Quarter Horse, One Famous Eagle, Tap It, and Wicked Strong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a very impressive list. We also have Outstanding Broodmare, Dam of Arrogate, Bubbler. You know, it's just, like I said, everyone, you know, for example, we contacted Clear Sky Farms. They gave us a Bubbler. They helped get us a Abel Tasman. I mean, really, it's an effort by the entire industry, and what a great opportunity for any individual who wants to own one of these halters. You know, it's a great way to support the industry that we all love.
Well, the auction, and I'll send out the links, and we'll send them out, you know, all over the course of the week. But it starts today, closes next Friday. And last year, I mean, I suppose that looking at this list, there's reason to anticipate that you'll exceed the number from last year.
Oh, we certainly hope so. I mean, last year's response was wonderful. We had, you know, some really great halters, just like we do this year. And, We had four fewer halters last year. We had we were hoping to get 30. We got 29, so we're really happy about that. And we're hoping, you know, we raise in excess of $30,000 this year. And it's for a really, really good cause. It doesn't go to our administrative work. It doesn't go to any therapeutic testing. It strictly goes to illegal, illicit substances and their use in the racehorse. We're not concerned about, you know, corticosteroids with this money or Lasix. None of this goes to that. It's just strictly illegal substances that should never be in a racehorse.
Let's talk about the grant money and the research initiatives and out of competition testing. I mean, a lot of the topics that we discuss and have discussed over the years, and bring everybody up to speed on where RMTC is right now, and all the model rules efforts, everything that goes into the initiatives that have grown out of RMTC over the years.
Yeah, well, we've really focused and refocused this in the last couple of years. We feel like, you know, the therapeutic work we've done is valuable and hopefully helpful to horsemen, but now we're really trying to switch gears. And in a way, it's a little bit more challenging when you're looking at illegal substances because, first of all, you kind of have to figure out what you need to start looking for. Some of the things that we've funded in the last 12 months include an improved detection for EPO. You know, the erythropoietin-stimulating substances are certainly a concern, and one of the concerns we have is they can't be found for very long. So we've got a project that we're working that is funded that's being worked on at the University of California Davis-Matty Laboratory, and we're hoping, and from all indications, we're going to get a tenfold increase in our ability to detect EPO, which is amazing, and hopefully it will be a test that can be run as part of any screen without a lot of extra expense, as it is currently quite expensive to run that test. We've been working on, we have the first double-blind lab program, which basically means we can test the laboratories that are accredited by RMTC without them knowing we're testing them, and that's the only of its kind in the world when it comes to horse racing. So that's, you know, something we're really excited about and really have worked hard on. We're continually looking at ways we can suggest and recommend model rules to improve the safety for racehorses. Recently, we proposed and had adopted a model rule that deals with claiming horses and when a claim can be voided if a horse is, for example, injured or dies on the racetrack, because we know those horses are at a higher risk for catastrophic injury, we wanted to give them extra protection. So those are the kind of things that we've been working on. It varies day to day, and certainly it is very broad and would take more than probably one of your entire shows to talk about everything we work on. But it's a good list, and I think it's a list that will matter to horses.
The concerns, and you and I have touched on this, you know, repeatedly, and before you with Dr. Watterson, and the moving target, Dr. Benson, that this continually is, and you know the horse playing community and you know, the general observers are always concerned and frustrated by what they believe to be whatever influence, whatever products are being used at any time to enhance a horse's performance, to take an edge. Explain how that can be, that field can be leveled, and how you can catch up, because it's something of an elusive goal, because we're constantly told that those that are cheating are always finding something that puts them ahead of those that are testing and those that are seeking to stop. And explain if and when we can get caught up and be ahead.
Well, the short answer is it will be very rare, if ever, that we'll be ahead. Every once in a while, a laboratory will add a screen or add a substance to their screen, and it will be in there the first time someone uses something. Often these are older drugs that have just been recycled. But, you know, the catching up, I liken it to looking, you're not looking for a needle in a haystack, you're looking for a specific piece of hay in a haystack. So it's very challenging to find exactly what might be being used to influence or improve or change a horse's performance out of all the potential substances that could be used. And there are hundreds of thousands of potential substances that could be used. So it's very difficult to develop a test that fits into a reasonable cost screen. If we had unlimited money and unlimited budgets, that we certainly could have more and more drugs added to the screens all the time, but both time and money is limited, so we have to be very selective and very smart about how we spend this money. So what we try to do is we try to find likely substances that will be used. You know, a lot of what we've been focusing on are things called selective androgen receptor modulators. They act like steroids. So first of all, 10 years ago, we limited anabolic steroid use. A few years ago, we really curtailed the use of clenbuterol for the purpose of the anabolic effects. That's becoming more curtailed. And as that becomes more curtailed, people who want the anabolic effects and are looking for those are going to move on. And a lot of these SARMs, or selective androgen receptor modulators, are the next target. So one of the projects we focused on this year and funded was to detect a specific SARM. And so as we see this trend and we look to other industries, other sports, human sports, and other places where there are performance-enhancing substances, we have to develop similar horse-based tests because horses don't always treat the drugs the same way humans do, human bodies do.
I haven't asked you this in a long time, but it was believed or presumed anyway that if a frozen sample protocol were to be installed, that mm-hmm. that could be a huge inhibitor to those trying to cheat, and the potential, a year later or however long later to go back and test samples, once revelations and mm-hmm. once certain things come to light. What's the position these days on RMTC when it comes to a frozen sample program?
I think the our position is that there is some value to it. It's going to be very limited because of storage space and things like that. And you have to always be concerned about the degradation of the sample the longer it's stored. But interestingly, what happens when you analyze a blood sample, for example, using modern equipment? Basically, it develops a map. It's like looking at a globe of the world, and all of the continents are outlined, but maybe you don't have cities listed. So if you don't have the cities listed, you won't always know where you are. But the nice thing about these modern methods is it will put the cities in before their name. So in other words, if there is a drug in a specific horse's sample and you do an analytic testing with LCMS or GCMS, there will be a spike there to represent that drug is in the sample. We may not know what that drug is yet, but later we can go back when we figure out what that drug is and compare it to previous results. So, and it's really easy to keep a computer file and very quick to go and compare that specific spike to the library that you now have. So there are the advantage of keeping physical samples is becoming more and more limited.
Is there any development or anything that has happened? We are led to believe or led to hope that the out of competition testing concept is another potential armament in this fight. Your thoughts on the value of it and the implementation of it and the practicality of it?
Sure, absolutely. I think that out of competition testing is one of the most valuable assets we have. There are things that can be done to a horse several weeks before it races that will affect its performance and potentially ultimately affect its health and welfare, which is another thing we're certainly concerned about. What we are looking at and what we have developed with RCI is a rule that goes beyond the previous rule, which is essentially to catch blood doping and what they call gene doping, which no one knew what it was, and venoms and toxins and things like that. So our goal is to get the rule that RCI has passed, which includes all these growth promoters and things that we've talked about today, and it's based on WADA's code of standards for the human drugs, and get that passed everywhere. And if it is passed in every racing jurisdiction, ideally we will be able to sample any horse that is in the racing population at any time for a very broad list of illegal substances. We're not concerned about the phenylbutazone, the corticosteroids, things like that, the things that aren't going to have an effect necessarily on race day 3 weeks later, but we're concerned about the EPOs and the growth promoters and the growth hormones, things like that.
One of the things that we regularly have checked in on with Dr. Benson and with RMTC and whether it's other, other portions of the RMTC program and the support mechanism that the industry employs is the adoption, and you referenced a few different things, whether it's the controlled therapeutic program and NUMP. Give us an update, and I know on the website there's extensive easy ways for people to see, how far some of these adoption of programs and initiatives has come, but how happy are you with the 2018 progress, Dr. Benson, in the adoption of things like model rules and NUMP?
Mm-hmm. Well, in some ways, I'm extremely happy. I mean, for example, we just accredited one of the last laboratories that tests horse racing samples to RMTC standards. We now have a total of 10 labs that we've accredited. We would really like to get the last, at least Louisiana. They're the only lab that tests thoroughbreds that has not been accredited, so we'd certainly like to get them on board. But other than that, virtually every state you run a thoroughbred in, it's tested in a lab that is RMTC accredited. The controlled therapeutic substance list, I think that the information we have on the website reflects what is in fact occurring. It is a little bit frustrating because in some states, for example, they'll have adopted all but one of our thresholds, and so we're stuck with them as partially completed, but they're so close. And really, we're hoping to get them over that last hump for that. Usually it's butte, lowering the butte from 5 micrograms to 2. So we're very close with the controlled therapeutic substance list. We're up in the 90% of your racing that occurs is subject to that list. I think we would all like to see more movement on the multiple medication violation, and with adding the third-party Lasix in a couple of key states, that's really moved quite a bit forward in the number of races and the amount of the handle that's run through jurisdictions that have adopted. So we're so much further than we were 6 years ago. That's not saying that we're done or that we're giving up on working with states to get them all adopted, but we're certainly happy with the progress we've made.
On the laboratory front, I mean, that's an area where you have, I mean, virtual 100% completion. And why is that an area, do you think, Dr. Benson, that critics seem to focus on, that the lab, that somehow the labs, that inconsistencies, or maybe it's just the fact that when there is an issue with lab testing, and when there is the occasional problem that you know, that dogs a jurisdiction, maybe it's just that it's trotted out as, you know, as some sort of, you know, egregious problem, and yet it seems with the amount of testing that goes on that there's really few and far between issues on this front.
Yeah, you know, one of the board members who is works for in a significant jurisdiction has said the only time they see positives for the controlled therapeutic substance is when someone doesn't follow the recommendation. So the reason that laboratories bear the brunt of this a little is, keeping in mind that RMTC accreditation shows the world that the lab is capable of doing the work that we require, the second layer is really getting the jurisdiction to require them to do that work. So in other words, if we certify that they can do the highest level of work, but the jurisdiction doesn't want to pay for that high level of work, you can't expect continuity among the jurisdictions. Does that make sense?
Hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so now our focus is really to get everyone to test all of those substances and all of those samples to the same high level. And one of the ways we've done that is by working with jurisdictions to submit double-blind samples. And what it really helps to do is, for example, we will go out and administer drugs to horses. We're currently, we've just entered into a partnership with New Vocations, who has the off-the-track thoroughbred standardbreds, and they have some horses that are in long-term rehab. We are going to administer only therapeutic medications to these horses, especially if they need them. Then we will take samples of blood and urine, and we know the drug is in there. We then submit it through a jurisdiction, like a regular sample. It has bute, it has Lasix, it looks like a regular sample, and that jurisdiction finds out whether their lab can find it. And that is often a wake-up call for the jurisdiction to say, maybe we need to require better testing, because if they can find, they can't find something based on our testing protocol at that time after administration, that is something we're concerned about. So a lot of it is education as well as making sure the labs are doing good work.
The only major jurisdiction in the country without accreditation is Louisiana, right? That's the last piece of the puzzle?
Correct.
And why, I mean, why wouldn't the racing entities, why wouldn't they demand? I mean, why wouldn't regulators demand that, in this case, I think it's LSU, why would they not demand that they get accredited?
Well, I think that the racing regulators have demanded that, and they finally put their foot down. If you look a few years ago, there's a base level of accreditation required by laboratories to meet our standards, and it's International Standards Organization is the base level. They have to be accredited to that level to even apply to ours. A few years ago, LSU didn't even have ISO standards. Now they've gotten some level of ISO, and we're hoping they get fully ISO accredited in order to apply to ours. So I think that the racing regulators think it's very important. They are pushing it. I know the tracks are pushing it. I know the horsemen are pushing it down there. But it's really a matter of time. It takes time to apply to that. Then it takes time to apply to our standards. But for the first time in a long time, we've seen LSU and the Louisiana Racing Commission move forward in a positive way, which is a great thing.
Well, good. You know, this I would urge not for people not just to, you know, to go to the website to, you know, to link to the Halter auction, but to see all the work that that's been done and the work that is constantly being done. And it's very frustrating, you know, to hear people, you know, rail against the industry saying that, you know, that not that we're not doing everything that, you know, could be done, you know, knowing what RCI and what RMTC and, you know, so many, you know, different, you know, steering organizations have worked toward. And I don't, you know, it's not easy work. And there's been so much progress made in a short time. I say this every time we meet, which is that there's more, you know, been done in the last 10 years than was done in the previous 100. So, you know, and, you know, there's never going to be enough. There, as you referenced, there's never going to be an end point, really, because things constantly, you know, are change, and it is a moving target. And, you know, there's people that are always, you know, there's money involved, and there's people that are always going to be looking to, you know, to evade the capture and you know, a dragnet, as it were. But there's smart people working hard to, you know, to be, you know, to be there to try to stem it.
Yeah. And you know, to give you an idea, it was very funny. You talk about people criticizing the industry. I read an article the other day that said, you know, the Jockey Club has given $1 million for tactical research. And while the Jockey Club has been very generous with us, I would love $1 million. We don't have that kind of budget. Our goal is to fund $125,000 worth of research over the next 4 years. Each year for the next 4 years, so $500,000. So there's not millions of dollars to do this. You know, this halter auction that we do gives us almost 20% of our budget for the year for the research.
Wow. And you must be, are there miscellaneous grants and monies out there that you can apply for that might not even necessarily be designed or conceived with racing in mind, but just general, because I imagine the work that gets done has wider application in many areas.
Yeah, absolutely. One of our greatest partners is the American Quarter Horse Association, and we had a grant that we submitted to them this year for a drug called ethylphenidate, which is like methylphenidate or Ritalin. And they funded our grant to be able to detect ethylphenidate and its metabolites. And, you know, without that funding, it would be more money that we would spend out of our limited reserves to try and catch up and fund those things. But, yes, if we have groups like that will fund us. The Jockey Club gave us, I think, $40,000 this year for tactical research. So, yeah, we had, you know, even the Jockeys Guild gave money for tactical research. And as we all know, they're another organization that's definitely underfunded. But it all comes from our stakeholders, donors. We have donors who specifically earmark money for research. The AAP, the equine practitioners, specifically earmark funding for research every year. So.
Well, here's an opportunity to contribute to the good work that RMTC does, and at the same time, get your hands on coveted the halters and the list, as we said at the top, of just stars, whether they're stallion stars and, you know, all of them whose exploits on the racetrack. You know, made several of them Hall of Famers and Hall of Famers to be. It's just a great list. We're about an hour and a half away from the auction going live on eBay. You can get to it by going to rmtcnet.com, and I'll send out the links as well, and there'll be plenty of you know, Facebook and Twitter and so forth. But it really is an elite group. Abel Tasman, Accelerate, Game Winner, Monomoy Girl, Wonder Godot, Yoshida, Hav de Grav, Lady Eli, Rachel Alexandra. I mean, these are names that, you know, for those that are wild-eyed fans. this is a unique opportunity. Serena's song, Silver Bullet Day, Songbird, Pharaoh, and Animal Kingdom, AP Indy. And I know there are some, in fact, Lenny Shulman should be bidding on AP Indy. California Crow, Go Saffer, Giapponte, Gopher Gin, Grindstone, Gunrunner, Justify, Mastery, More Than Ready, Mucho Macho Man, The Quarter Horse, One Famous Eagle, The Great Tappet, and Wicked Strong, and Bubbler, the lovely dam of Arrogate, and a wonderful, productive dam she is. That's a nice offbeat for those that are going to come in sideways, maybe, on right, on Arrogate. But this is a wonderful, wonderful list, and the auction starts today. And ends next Friday, 30th. So start monitoring and jump in and put yourself in position to take one home. And RMTC and Dr. Benson and everybody involved, thanks. The wonderfully generous donations from the stud farms and owners and breeders, really quite nice here, the people that made this happen.
Yes, we are very excited, and we appreciate everyone's efforts and donations. And, you know, it's nice, even people who couldn't get a donation this year have said, I'll donate this next year. And it was, like I said, this is just the outpouring from the industry is much appreciated, and we're very grateful for every halter we have.
Well, we're grateful for the opportunity to talk to Dr. Dion Benson, and RMTC continues to work to serve the industry, and you can support the effort at eBay this week, ending next Friday. We'll give you reminders again next week. Dr. Benson, thanks so much. Happy holidays, and we'll be tracking and maybe even dip our toe into the bidding arena here too, and then opportunity. There's a few there I wouldn't mind having.
Thank you so much, Steve. We appreciate it.
Not at all. Dr. Dion Benson, who works 24/7 at this. We'll take bottom of the hour break, and we'll come back. We're looking for DeRosa. He's disappeared. We'll see if we can't find Ed. Either way, we'll come back and close out the weekend preview. Big holiday weekend of action that is going to start shortly. And A couple of other places too. We should mention, like Golden Gate. They've got the Berkeley. They got the Grade 3 Berkeley as well on Saturday. Woodbine's winding down. I forgot to mention it Monday or Tuesday, but I had seen the note that they've given up on the turf up there. So turf season is over at Woodbine, and they'll do everything. Of course, they've got the synthetic the rest of the way, but they've got some nice. They still got some nice stakes yet to come. A couple more weeks. I mentioned Tampa getting started, so we'll do some odds and ends if we can't find Eddie. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use ExpressFund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Coming back, and as I mentioned, a couple of other places that have got stakes to not just stakes, but regular good weekend racing, including Tampa kicking off, and I mentioned Golden Gate with the Berkeley as well. Want to close out the morning with a visit from Gary Stevens, and as we talked with Jay Privman earlier this morning, Gary letting Jay know on Tuesday that there wasn't going to be another medical clearance, that the last advisory was going to be the one that forced Gary's hand. And after an amazing and improbable comeback that just really was a perfect coda to a Hall of Fame legendary career, Gary Stevens joins us. And Gary, as I wrote you, I didn't know if I should say sorry about this or congratulations.
I appreciate the congratulations. There's no need to say sorry. It was a fun run, a great run, and there was more than one of them. And I guess the first two retirements were just rehearsals for the real deal. But I'm ready. It was time, and I've never been faced with not being able to make a choice. And there was no choice. Dr. Taboni, you know, he was the one that patched me up for so many years and kept me going, and kind of ironic that he's the one that, and he was very matter of fact. He just said, "You're done. There won't be any more." So, I'm good with it. I'm relieved, and now I want to get to the doctors and figure out how we're gonna move forward and treat this.
Well, and with this decision and with this circumstance, there's obviously the chance to reflect, not on the whole breadth of the career, because you've reflected. You've been on and reflected on the major portion of the career, but this extra bonus that we all got here from you, It was special for a lot of people, Gary. There's young horse players and fans, you know, that got to see you that probably never expected to. Talk about your level of satisfaction with what you accomplished over these last several years.
Well, you know, being out for 7.5 years and doing the commentating and some acting and stuff, I never really thought that I would be back, and I probably wouldn't have been back and if Luck hadn't have been canceled, the HBO series. Perfectly happy doing what I was doing in it. And you know, when they pulled the plug on that, I needed something more, and I wasn't ready to quit. And I think the biggest bonus for me was the last 5 years. It was the best 5 years of my entire career. Beholder came with it, Mucho Macho Man, you know, Oxbow, and you know, that was a hell of a run. So these last 5 years were probably the most enjoyable. My youngest daughter, Maddie, she got to see me ride. She, you know, she didn't know what Daddy did, and so it's been good. But it's my mom; she wouldn't even watch me race. So I know my whole family's relieved that that I'm done, and in a way, I'm relieved as well.
You mentioned, you know, the group of horses that this portion of your career, I mean, and to, you know, to be associated with a Beholder, and, you know, to get that chance and to get one more classic win with Lucas. I mean, these were all, like, just sort of, to me, remarkable. Yeah, because I think everybody had just assumed, you know, that's it. We're never going to see these moments again. And it was a treat, I got to tell you.
Well, it was a treat for me as well, Steve. And you know, the support that I got, you know, after being away that long was phenomenal. And, you know, I was and I am at peace with myself. I was very happy doing what I was doing. And there comes a time, I don't know when that time was going to come, because I had looked forward to next year. I got a couple of young horses that I thought might be Triple Crown type horses, and there's always that one. So this time I didn't get a choice, and I'm fine with that. So
you mentioned Luck, and we should really pause for a second, because if you had not been getting on regularly again, and then realizing, and John Parada talked about this at the time, and to you kind of saying to yourself, geez, I feel good. and sort of like an eye-opening moment that said, I think I can ride in the afternoons again.
Yeah, I mean, if it's well documented, my knee problems and everything, and eventually everybody knew what happened. I had to get a new knee. But that time off, it helped me, you know, and like they say, time heals all up to a certain point. And so, you know, yeah, when they canceled Luck, I wasn't getting that adrenaline rush, and I don't know how I'm going to get that adrenaline rush now. I guess I'll just watch races and enjoy it, be a fan. But I definitely got to slow down now, so it's time.
And I'm just looking. You added close to another 70 graded stakes to your list of stake wins.
Yeah, crazy. I mean, you don't when it me, you don't. I don't even think about it and maybe don't respect it enough until this day comes. You know, I got to reflect when I retired back in 2005 and the accomplishments but once I started back, it was, my head was down and I was riding, you know, and you don't really have time to bask it and really know what has happened until this day, you know. And I look back over these last 5 years, and it's like I said, that the last 5 years were the years that I enjoyed the most, I think.
Eight, and I just added them up, 18 more grade ones during this period. 18.
Not a bad run.
You know, and there's also some moments in here, and looking at some of the horses, you know, that you know, you got a chance to work with some people, including somebody like Michael McCarthy, for instance, with Paved, and you know, other horsemen that, you know, you probably you know, didn't, you know, you had relationships with, but I'm sure we're just as excited about, you know, putting you on a horse for them as anything that they've done in their career.
Yeah, I mean, to see Michael come along, come full circle, you know, from when he first started out as an assistant working for Ben Cecil and then go on to Pletcher and look at his accomplishments this year, winning with his first Breeders' Cup starter, you know, that's pretty cool to watch all of that happen. And you know, and then to have been able to ride for Wayne. And unfortunately, I hadn't ridden for Bob anything for the last 3 years, but we had had a great career together. And so it's fun to look back at.
Proctor and just
yeah,
looking
Tom,
through.
I mean, Glen Hill Farm, God, Mr. Lavin offered me a contract in 1980 when I was an apprentice, when they still had contract riders. And 40 years later, still riding for them and the grandson, Craig Burnick, who's taken over Glen Hill Farm now and is very, very passionate about the sport and started up this Thoroughbred Idea Foundation that I think is going to be very helpful for our industry in the long run. You know, just a huge fan of the sport and one of the old school farms, you know, of yesteryear that's
sure.
still going and going strong.
Now, it's there's so many moments here. I could specifically ask about, and there's some that I had frankly I had forgotten. I'd forgotten you rode Run Happy in the Malibu.
Yeah. Rode him in his final two races, and that win in the Malibu was very, very special for me, and just, you know, having the honor to ride those kind of horses. You know, at that stage of my career, was just all a big bonus for me.
Well, it's a bonus. It was a bonus for all of us, Gary. I mean, to be able to, you know, to watch you again and to be able to talk to you about racing again. And I suppose the double, the Breeders' Cup Distaff, Breeders' Cup Classic double, even with Oxbow's win in the Preakness and as good as Firing Line ran in the Derby, I think those two wins probably that's probably the most magical portion of this you know, of this run.
Yeah, you know, it's very ironic that those particular 2 days, because I had the highest highs and probably one of the lowest lows of my entire career. And that lowest low was winning on the Philly She's a Tiger in the juvenile and being disqualified in a $2 million race. Riding for, you know, an owner, Mark DiDomenico, that was mostly responsible for my comeback. It was through his rehabilitation and training that I was able to come back after 7 years vacation, and then riding for my good friend Jeff Bondi and being disqualified. I came back to the jocks room after she'd been disqualified, and I had a text from my big brother Scott, and he said, "Put it behind you. You got some big races to ride later in the day." And those were that was Mucho Macho Man in the Classic, you know, so. As a jockey, you know, I learned early on that you've got to leave the past, that once you cross the finish line, it's turf history, whether you win or you lose, because you got to go out and do it again in 15 minutes. So high-pressure days, but a lot of people didn't know what I was experiencing emotionally, having been disqualified. I was pissed off. I was upset, but I was able to sweep it behind me and go out and do my job. So those are the highs and lows of this game.
Well, and that's the hallmark of your just legendary Hall of Fame career. Do you feel that there's anything that's been left undone?
No, I really don't. I hadn't won a classic. I would have loved to have won another Kentucky Derby. We almost got that done. It took a Triple Crown winner to hold us out of the winner's circle. with Firing Line and running for riding for a young trainer with his first Derby starter, Simon Callahan. He's a great horseman. He's going to have a Hall of Fame career, I believe. And running second wasn't too bad when you see that American Style goes on and wins the Triple Crown. It was fun to be part of that.
Now, and Jay mentioned that you're heading out to Del Mar today to see Ashley run as well. The 7-year-old gelding has really become one of your absolute favorites.
Yeah, he's a cool dude. I worked him last weekend, and he was actually the final horse that I worked before the injury. And Tyler Bays just picked him up, and we had a little team meeting yesterday, and hopefully he can get the money today.
Well, Gary, I really appreciate this, and speaking for everybody, I think I'm speaking for everybody that just wish you continued success. As I said to Jay, there's nothing you haven't attempted in your life that you haven't been successful at. So whatever these next acts are going to be, they'll be equally triumphant. But it's one of the absolute pleasures for me to, this was such a fun thing that you did, and it's such a, such an enviable achievement to come back the way you did. It's very
Steve,
special.
I appreciate it all, and hopefully we'll have some more conversations. I'm just going to take my time right now. I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm just going to absorb things and look at my options and take my time and just enjoy my family for a while.
Absolutely. Well, the girls will be happy to have the all to themselves.
I hope so.
I love it. Well, that's it, until Angie throws you out of the house and says, go do something.
Exactly.
Gary Stevens, everybody. And Gary back on Twitter, too. You can congratulate Gary yourself and tell him how much his career has meant to you as a horse player and as a fan. Gary, thanks so much.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Not at all. Gary Stevens, everybody. And what a great way to round out the weekend preview. If I'm gushing over him, and you know I have, I mean, I've said for years, doing this now 13 years, and before I was lucky enough to get involved, I mean, there were two riders that were my favorite as a player and, you know, as a fan, and that was Rich Migliore and Gary Stevens. And, you know, to have the conversations I've got, honor and privilege of having over the years with Mig and with Stevens, it's every time, even if we're just talking about, you know, mundane racing, or, you know, if Richie and I are looking at, you know, some recap or something, I sort of pinch myself every time I'm having the conversations with them. Because I can remember going up to Mig after he did Mary Ryan's show and talking to him and, you know, being kind of shy and, you know, sort of starstruck. And the same with Stevens, to have these conversations about moments in their career. And I never expected when Gary retired the first time, I mean, never expected to have the enjoyment we've had these last, 5-plus years for him to come back. And think about that. He's had more grade one wins in this comeback than most jocks have in a career. It's unbelievable. Just amazing. Gary Stevens, Dr. Dion Benson, James Scully, Marty McGee, Jay Pribman, and Nick Tamaro. It's going to be a terrific weekend of racing. Stay here, Sirius XM, HRRN later, and tomorrow, and down the stretch, and everything else. We'll come back with you Monday to recap the big weekend. Good luck, everybody.
latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use ExpressFund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.